This is Bill McClure for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and welcome to another edition of Take My Arm.
This is Richard Dunnigan. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience and is designed with the assistance of print and visually impaired volunteers.
And this is Bob Martin, and don't bother me for a minute.
Bob, we're on the air.
I know, but this will just take a minute.
What is it that's so important?
I'm looking for a rocking chair.
Your what?
And I may just have found it. Look at this website.
We are supposed to be doing a show, Bob.
But just look at this, Bill.
I'd love to.
Or if you were looking for a cabinet or a vanity or even a beautiful pen.
I'm happy you found something interesting, Bob. But we are supposed to be doing a broadcast.
And speaking about doing a broadcast, have you ever noted how much easier it would be if we had a better desk service to work with?
You're sure right about that. When I lay my braille sheets down here, there isn't very much room.
I know. They're almost on top of mine.
Bob, you don't use braille.
Well, if I did, we wouldn't be able to keep our pages apart.
Just work with it, Bob. I know we're a little cramped, but now is not the time.
This is so like you, Richard. Like I always say, never put off until tomorrow what you can put off until a week from Thursday.
I think that's what you can do today.
Oh, good idea. So, look at this website. It's called Woodworking in the Dark, and it's run by a fellow who makes furniture, and he is totally blind.
And he uses power tools?
Well, it says here that when people came over to visit him, his wife says he's down in the workroom. And when they go into his shop, the room is totally dark, and all they hear is his power saw running. Kind of neat, huh?
And what is his name?
Bob Kennedy. And another thing we could do today is call him up.
Good thinking, Bob. Would you believe that Bob Kennedy is our special guest?
Wow. And I didn't even hear the phone ring.
And now our guest today, who is head of the call-in center at RLCB, Bob Kennedy.
Tell us about yourself.
I was born in West Virginia. Spent a lot of time there. I've lived in six different states now and came to North Carolina from South Carolina. I lived in New York for about 18 years, I guess. I ran a business up there, and then when that was starting to fall down, the economy went to pieces there in the early 80s. Came down to actually visit a friend of mine that I'd gotten the dog with in Florida. We both went through the seeing eye together and went down to his house, and on the way back home, a friend of mine was in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I called ahead of time, told him I'd be coming through it, so we were in high school together, and when I stopped in to visit him, he asked me if I was still looking for work, and he told me if I wanted to, he'd take me out the next day and get me a job, and I thought, gee, how many people have ever said that, you know, everybody promises you a job. I went out with him, and sure enough, by the time we were done, we had three offers to come to work in Charlotte, so I went back home to New York, closed the business down, and within 3 weeks, I was back down to Charlotte working.
Tell us about your education.
Of course, I graduated high school in New York. I'd worked ever since I got out of high school, worked for either for myself or for other companies. Came down here in 1989. I entered the University of South Carolina. I live in Chapel Hill, so living there, you have to call South Carolina the other Carolina. I graduated from the other Carolina in 1995. I came out with the four-year degree, and I came out with a two-year degree in criminal justice, the associate's degree in criminal justice. And it was a fun time. I was older than most kids that start college. While I was a student there, I was also an athlete with the United States Association of Blind Athletes. I traveled a good bit around the country at that time competing in different sports. It became a running joke on Wednesday to ask me where I'd be for the weekend because most people would, you know, you go home for the weekend, you study your books or whatever, and I might be going to San Francisco one weekend or off to Denver or something like that. In 1993 and 94, while I was in college, I had 63,000 air miles in each year traveling to different tournaments.
What were you able to achieve, Bob, in your contact sports?
I was actually coaching high school wrestling in South Carolina for 5 years total. During that time, I took 20 kids to the state finals. So I did Olympic-style wrestling. Under the visually impaired titles, I won two national titles and come in second another year. And then sidestepped from the wrestling because it was not a Paralympic sport any longer. I sidestepped into judo, where I became the alternate for my weight class in 1996 and 2000. But it was fun, and I got to go to Japan 1 year and compete over there. And been to the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs 15 different times. And, you know, got to meet some really neat people over the years.
Well, tell us about the different types of work that you've done over the years, Bob.
I've either had a lot of careers or not able to hold a job, whichever way we look at it here. After I graduated high school way back in 72, I was running a little repair shop where I used to rebuild engines for people. That's how I started my tool collection was, you need an engine built? Great. Let's see, I need a torque wrench. I need this. Okay, this is the price. I'll do it. You know, add up the price of a torque wrench and a ring compressor, and you say, I can do that for about $85. And got a lot of experience in that way. In 73, I went down to Daytona, Florida, went through the American Motorcycle Institute training program down there. And I came home in November, which was a terrible time to go into Western New York and find a job on motorcycles because, you know, we have two seasons in the Buffalo area. It was winter and just before winter. So, you know, it's not a good time to be riding a motorcycle in November. The following spring, I got a job with Kawasaki. I worked there for a little while. Then I went to school again for stern drive boats. Went back to where I lived up there in New York and opened a marina. Probably the most enjoyable job I ever had as far as being a mechanic. Got into lawnmowers along, small engine repair along the way, stayed with cars for a long time, came down to North Carolina in 1984, started out in a little landscape shop, put me on Channel 9 in Charlotte, and the owner of a Pontiac dealership down there saw me on TV, called me to see if I'd consider coming to work there, and nicest guy you'd ever want to work for. In the mechanic field, you don't find a lot of people willing to let you try this or that. It's like, you know, no, insurance will keep, it'll kill us, you know. We can't have you wandering around the shop, you'll get hit with a car. They make up all kinds of goofy excuses, but the point is they wouldn't let you do it. Mr. Keffer was more of a, you tell me what you need to make this work and I'll get it for you. It was great. He sent me through automatic transmission school several times, different models of transmissions I went through, and that's where I specialized for him. And, you know, he might come in on a Monday and tell me where I was going to be going to work because he owned several dealerships there in Charlotte. Or, you know, I might come in on a Monday and he'd go, I got someone coming to pick you up. You're going to go over to the Dodge store for a week. Or he moved me over there actually for several months to catch up on the backlog they'd been developing. And in 89, they started putting more and more onboard computers in the cars. And I had no way of being able to access the computers because I was the only totally blind person in the country asking for a talking scan tool, and there just was no hurry to get one of those developed with a limited market of me. That's when I decided it would be far more impressive to say I left the field than it would be to have people report you as unable to do the work. So that's when I entered the University of South Carolina. After that, I was a part owner of a racing newspaper for a while. We covered dirt track and blacktop racing here in North and South Carolina. Went to work at Wells Fargo for a number of years. I was a lien release officer. I took the liens off your property when you paid the mortgage off. I did some refinancing there and ran two different call centers for them. Worked at Sears. I used to dispatch the little guys to come around work on your appliances or lawn and garden equipment. Covered six states for that. Left Sears in 2009. Finally, in April of 2009, I transferred over to RLCB here in Raleigh, where I am now. I run the call center for them. And I also help out with the adaptive technology there. I don't do any training any longer there, but I do write scripts for different people at the JAWS software. And I've gone to the advanced scripting class down there and at Freedom Scientific in Florida. So since that was April of 2009, I'm still there. So that's a brief look at what I've done.
Was there anything unusual about your working at RLCB?
It's the first time I've ever worked around other blind people. I, especially when I was a mechanic, I was the only one in the building. And Actually, I was the only totally blind one in the Southeast at the time.
Bob, what changes in employment opportunities have you seen since you've worked at RLCB?
The call center's actually grown since I've been there. When I started, I believe there was 2 people there. But right at the moment, there's 5. There's several bids on contracts that are out there right now. We can grow to 12 in a hurry without a whole lot of problem. We can add another room, another 10 or 12 people on should we get a contract that large. Basically, they're known for production at RLCB. They produce pillows and different bits of clothing and equipment for the military. The call center has picked up, and we've been able to help out several local businesses either on a outbound calling campaigns or inbound contracts where we try to find answers to questions like a help desk would do or things like that. We've taken orders for companies here in the Raleigh area that were software related. There's been a lot of improvement as far as job opportunities there in the call center. We require very good skills with JAWS. I don't actually need somebody coming to work for me if they can't work a computer, because I don't have time to train you in a call center position as well as how to use the computer, you know. So we do require you be a very good user of JAWS. I've seen things come and go in the production area, and the call center is one we're kind of excited about.
How does the quality of your computer equipment at home compare with the quality of computer equipment that you use at RLCB?
I have the most recent edition of JAWS at home, version 12. We use version 11 at work. So I hear a lot of people complain about it because it doesn't do this, that, or the other. You stop and think about it. Just a few years ago, you couldn't go on the internet. You stop and think about how amazing it is. I know there's other programs out there, and there's free programs. But, gosh, the advances that, and it moves so fast, so... I used to build race cars years ago, and I thought things went fast then, but boy, you get in the software world, and it really moves fast.
I've also been told that you're an active woodworker. Tell us about some of the challenges that you face, and describe some of the adaptive technology that you use.
Oh, boy, people have gotten the word out on me. I have a website out there called Woodworking in the Dark. Obviously, the name is a joke, because... everything I've done has been in the dark since I was 12. Any good woodworking is done by measuring accurately and then cutting to those measurements. That becomes a challenge because we're very limited on measuring equipment that's been specialized. You know, I have a combination square I use. That's just a Sterrett. Sterrett's a tool company out of Massachusetts. It's one of their combination squares. There's nothing, no braille on it at all. I just, you know, it's a 90-degree square. There's a 45 branch on the one end. You slide the rule up and down in it. There's nothing special about it. It's the same tool that anybody that can see would pick up and use. I do have a talking tape measure. It's accurate to a 16th of an inch. A 16th is plenty accurate enough because wood will swell and contract, and you know, you've got to have that 16th built into it so that it doesn't seize up on you when there's the humidity goes up or it doesn't fall out when the humidity goes down. As far as adaptive, I've got that. I've got a click rule that measures also in a 16th of an inch, but I do have another braille tape measure with it's got a 6-inch ruler that's marked out in 1/8 of an inch, and the tape has got dots every 6 inches on there, so you line that up with the 6-inch ruler, and you can count off fairly accurate with that. And beyond that, you just start using things that are available to everybody. I've got a 1-2-3 block there it's an inch one way, it's 2 inches the other, it's 3 inches the other. You can use the brass setup gauges that they sell. They're marked out by 1/16 of an inch, and you can add one or more together. And those are the big challenges that you run into. As far as my equipment goes, the tools I work with, I have a table saw, a jointer. Oh boy, 4 routers, 5 routers, I guess. I've got a bandsaw, a drill press, a miter saw. Yeah, I've got a lot of power tools. I can just go on for days talking about my woodworking because it's so much fun. I've built anything from a pen to kitchen cabinets, roll-top desks. I make segmented bowls. That's a fancy way of saying you're taking more than one species of wood and cutting it in on an angle and gluing it together in a ring, stacking the rings on top of each other, and then turning that out. It becomes a different colored rings throughout the bowl. I have one I do that's got three colors of wood. There's maple is very light wood, and walnut is very dark, and then I have this red wood from Africa called Padauk, which is so you've got a red, white, and brown, and you stagger the rings as they go around, so you've got, it looks like a spiral shape as you look at the bowl. It goes around, it's red, white, brown, red, white, brown. It's just going, kind of looks like an old barber pole for those who used to be able to see, and you can remember those. The woodworking is a lot of fun, and being able to sell something you've created is almost unfair. You've got the pleasure you put into making it, and then when someone turns around and buys it and, kind of helps you fund your habit, it's almost unfair because you're able to remember those, to keep it going, and just because somebody liked what you bought. Big reward in that.
Do you have any final comments?
Yeah, very simply, never let others set your limitations.
Thank you for being our guest today on Take My Arm.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Welcome again to the TRRS Radio Theater on the Air with Bill McClure, Richard Dunnigan, Bob Martin, and Abby Lewis with another episode of
Blind Justice.
Our scene opens at the retirement home. It is Visitor's Day.
Bill, you have any family coming today?
Rain or shine, my granddaughter always comes to visit. She says she comes to see me, but I know what she really comes for is the stories she wants me to tell her.
And she believes they're all true?
Of course she does. Every one of them.
All those old lies you tell around here and then say, oh, this really happened.
Well, they did.
Right, and pigs fly and...
Grandpa, I'm here.
Of course you are. And wait till you hear the story I have for you today.
And they really happened too, didn't it, Grandpa?
See you later, Bob. I have important business to attend to. Come on, Abby. The fate of the world is at stake, and the president is meeting with his cabinet and all the military advisors.
Can we go to your room for the meeting, Grandpa?
We can hold it anywhere you like. But why my room?
Because when we go to your room, I get to go first, and you take my arm.
Lead on, Madam Secretary.
Here we are. How about the big stuffed chair? You said that chair makes your back feel better.
And so it does. Come on up here in my lap.
Okay.
Comfortable?
Oh, yeah. Your tummy is nice and soft. Not like Daddy's.
His time will come. Have I ever told you the story about the time when I was in Egypt, exploring the Sphinx?
And you got trapped? How'd you get out?
Well, to tell you the truth, I didn't think I was going to. I was walking around the side of the Sphinx when all of a sudden a trap door sprang open beneath me. And I dropped straight down into this dark pit.
Was there anything in the pit, Grandpa?
Oh, my, yes. There were more snakes than I've ever seen in my life.
And you don't like snakes, do you, Grandpa?
Not at all. And they were all around me. Cobras and pythons and boa constrictors and rattlesnakes and one that was even bigger than the snake in Harry Potter.
Were you scared?
Yes, I was scared. But you can't quit just because you're scared. I had to find a way out, and quickly. So I picked my way through the cobras.
And the pythons.
And boa constrictors.
And the rattlesnakes.
And lions, and tigers, and bears. Oh, my!
Grandpa, there weren't any lions or tigers or bears inside the Sphinx.
Oh, it was very dark in there. There might have been.
Yeah. There might have been.
Yeah, there might have been. And a whole lot of other things that I don't even want to think about.
Me neither. What happened next?
Well, I made my way through the snakes.
And the lions and tigers and bears?
I thought you said they weren't there.
It was dark, remember? They might have been.
You're right. They could indeed have been there.
But what happened next?
Well, I found myself in this dark cavern, and suddenly a deep voice called out,
"Who goes there?"
Where did the voice come from?
I didn't know, but it was loud.
How loud?
Loud enough to scare away all the snakes.
And the lions and tigers?
And bears.
Oh, my!
That's what I said. And then the voice said,
"You have violated the sacred presence of the Sphinx."
And I said, "Isn't there any way out?"
"Only if you can solve the riddle of the Sphinx."
You're good at riddles, Grandpa. You could solve it.
Wait till you hear the riddle.
Here is the riddle of the Sphinx. What has 4 legs in the morning, 2 legs in the afternoon, and 3 legs in the evening? Solve it and you live. Otherwise, the snakes come back.
Did you solve it, Grandpa?
What do you think?
I don't know. I couldn't have done it.
Well, I had to, just so that I could tell you about it.
Thank goodness. What was the answer?
Man.
Man? You mean like people?
Yes. When a man is born as a child, he crawls around on 4 legs, his hands and knees. During the afternoon of his life, he walks upright on 2 legs. And in the evening of his life, he needs help. So he uses a cane. 3 legs.
Wow.
Now, if you ever get caught inside a Sphinx, you'll know the answer to the riddle.
Oh, Grandpa, did that really happen?
Would I lie to you?
Yes.
Then why do you keep coming back every week?
Because I like the stories you tell me. Gotta go. Bye.
See you next week.
Another great example of blind justice.
Do you think we could talk with Dr. Bill? Something is bothering me.
We certainly don't want you bothered, so... It's time for Insights with Dr. Bill.
This is Dr. Bill. What's on your mind?
Dr. Bill, I've been thinking about Bob Kennedy as a black belt judo expert.
Pretty amazing, wasn't it?
How about better than you might have imagined?
Oh, much better. But I was wondering, it takes so much for a sighted person to get to that level and then stay that good. Mercy. I was just wondering what kinds of special challenges he had to have faced.
Well, let's ask him.
What special challenges have you faced in your judo and other martial arts that you've done?
Years ago, I got a black belt in Shotokan karate. Now, that's something I was able to walk away from that without a whole lot of misgivings. It gets a little harder as you go along. You don't stay as flexible as you used to, and the hearing's not as good as it once was due to all the things I've done over the years. And I think that hearing is probably the biggest challenge you've got in martial arts, because in karate at least, because you've got to keep the person in front of you, and you know, you've got to be able to tell when they're punching or kicking or whatever. My ears just aren't that good anymore, and I know my reflexes aren't fast enough to keep up with them. Judo, the biggest thing was finding people on your level to work out with. There's a lot of people who show up for practice and you mean to be there because you enjoy being around the other people. You know, you like laughing or whatever. You're trying to stay in somewhat better shape. You know, when you compete on an upper level, people don't want to get together with you out there because you're ready to bounce them around a little bit or get rough or whatever. And, you know, you don't find a lot of people coming into the gym going, yeah, come on, I want to get slammed around or I want to slam, you know. So that became a problem, trying to stay in the best condition. You know, part of working out in any martial art is you've got to keep your reflexes going. So if a person does this, you know to do that. So you've got to stay in tune and finding someone to work out with on your levels. Where I live now, that club at Carolina's, there's a lot of college-age guys in there that are, they like getting rough. You know, they're in there to compete and advance in the sport and so on. And my problem right now is finding the time to get over there with them and being in decent enough shape to offer them something. But, you know, for years it wasn't like that.
So at this point in your career as an athlete, are you more of a sparring partner?
I call myself an instructor now.
Wow. I really am impressed. To be able to feel when someone is about to punch you, or to hear a foot coming through the air at you.
And yet he talks about everyday life things the same way as a sighted person would.
See you later. Or, I was watching TV.
Most sight-impaired people use that kind of vocabulary, and want you to talk to them just the way you would talk to anyone else.
You know, it just wouldn't sound right to say, I was listening to the TV last night, even though that was what was happening.
Or, wait, how about this? I gotta go now. Feel you later.
It's funny you should mention that. Bob Kennedy said something about that to me. He mentioned that if you said something like that in real life, you would probably get fired, sued, or shot at.
Oh, thanks, Dr. Bill. I feel a lot better now.
Well, Bob, now that you're feeling better, maybe you'd like to do something for Bill when he gets back.
Sure. I'm all ears and fingers.
That's wonderful. But I think it's your eyes that will help him with this problem.
Okay. What does he need?
Well, Bill is playing at this concert next weekend, and it's a pretty complicated piece of music.
So?
So he really could use a page turner.
I can do that.
Bob, remember that I'm blind.
Oh, that's not a problem. The music isn't in Braille. So, where is it?
You want to tell him, Dr. Bill?
Just for you, Bob. It's right over there.
Be right back.
And so ends another episode of Insights with Dr. Bill. While Bob's looking for the music, let's spend some time with another of our TRRS volunteers. Conversations. The voices of TRRS. This is Richard Dunnigan. I am with Dwayne Ray. He is on the board for the Triangle Radio Reading Service and on the technical committee. Let's start by, Dwayne, just tell us a little bit about yourself personally.
I've actually been in computer industry for the last 30 years. I retired from a company called DTS Software in 2009, and after a couple of months of being bored, I took a job at the Apple Crabtree Valley Apple Store. Get to talk to people about computers every day, and they pay me.
Your background is computers, so what brought you to Triangle Radio Reading Service, and how long have you been volunteering over here?
I think I've been here about 3.5 years. The director of the Triangle Radio Reading Service, Linda Orrin, came to our church and gave a talk on all of the good work that they were doing over here. And I went up to her afterwards and I said, you know, I'm not really a very good reader, but I'd love to be able to help if there's some way that I could be of assistance. And she said, great, there's a technical committee. We really could use some technical expertise. They have a lot of really qualified people on there, but I've been involved in a lot of the net type of programming, podcasts and streaming audio, so forth. And I was hopefully an addition to that committee.
So you don't do any reading at all. You just work on computers.
That's correct.
So I believe you had something to do with getting the first podcast out there. You want us to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. One of the great things about podcasting is that it allows the listener to basically decide when they want to listen to something. So instead of having to tune in at 9 o'clock in the morning to hear something, podcasting allows you to basically download to some device. And there's some controversy on whether it should be called podcasting or netcasting or whatever, because the term pod, of course, comes from an Apple device, an iPod. But it really doesn't matter what type of device, as long as it plays what are called MP3 files. You can then, they're downloaded to your device, and then you can pick when you want to listen to it. We currently have 9 programs that are on podcasting, That gives you the capability of listening to those anytime. You can even archive them, so on your particular MP3 device. So you could keep copies of the Week magazine or the Triangle Business Journal. Both of those are available, and you could then go back and listen to them at a different time, or you could go back previous episodes.
The terminology, I think, is confusing to somebody who doesn't use this technology a little bit. You've used the term podcasting, and you said there's 9 programs, but I've been to the website, and there are a lot of programs that you can listen to that have played recently, actually some back to a year and a half or so. So tell me the difference. What makes a podcast versus the programs that I like to call audio on demand? Can you kind of give us a little technical explanation for that?
Sure. In the case of a podcast, you have to have some MP3 player device. Usually it's part of a computer, but there are certainly applications that are on MP3 devices that can download an audio file. It's done without any action on your part. The other way to get audio content on demand is if you go to the Triangle Radio Reading Service website, and there we have about 30 programs that you can listen to anytime you want. But typically you're going to have to use a computer to go to that website, select the program that you want, and then select the particular episode that you want. If you wanted the Triangle Business Journal for, let's say, May 15th, you would then select that file. If you wanted it for May the 8th, you would select that file. And you then can listen to it on your computer using your speakers or headphones.
How quickly after the program airs do we typically get these podcasts made available to the Internet?
Usually within 24 hours. Typically within an hour, then a file is created, and then somebody, unfortunately it's not automatic on our side, but somebody will then detect that that file has been created and will then upload it to the service that we use for podcasting. It is automatically uploaded to our website. So audio on demand, there's no human intervention required if you wanted to go to the website and listen to it there.
I want to talk about, you have just recently become a part of the board of the directors of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. When you were first approached and said, would you like to be on the board, what is it about this organization that motivates you to give your time? Because between the technical committee and the board now, you know, you're contributing a significant amount of time.
I only work part-time, and I really was looking for some way that I could make a contribution. Again, I'm not a very good reader, but I have some computer expertise, and the great thing about the tech committee is there's, you know, 8 or 10 guys that are geeks. I'm sorry, but that's what we are. A lot of the meetings themselves are about sharing our different technologies and looking at different ways that we can deliver audio content to people that are print impaired. I mean, it's almost sad in that a lot of the listeners for the Triangle Radio Reading Service had 70 years of perfectly good sight, and then due to macular degeneration or an accident or something else, are now unable to read something. And reading is such a joyful activity that, you know, if there's some alternative, and there's got to be a way that people can share that knowledge if they're print impaired. And that is something I found motivating, and I wanted to help.
What do you see the future for Triangle Radio Reading Service, or what is your vision for what you see this organization can become and the kind of things that it can do?
On the technical side, we would like to be able to expand the service such that we can reach more people, not only people in the local Triangle area, but, you know, people throughout the state. And there are technologies that are available that, if implemented, we could have a much broader distribution of our signal.
And I will just point out, though, that when we first came with the idea that maybe we ought to be podcasting, Dwayne is the one that got behind and did the research and did the legwork and helped us to get out there and do our first podcasting. Dwayne, since you're not a reader, okay, you don't get the microphone to talk to our listeners. Here's your chance. What would you like to say to the people who are listening to the Triangle Radio Reading Service?
Well, first of all, I appreciate the time that you take to listen to our service. If there's anything that we can do to make it easier to get or improve the service in any way, I hope you'll take the time to call the service. Give us your suggestions. Give us your feedback. as well as, you know, any support that you could provide would certainly be appreciated as well. But we're here to serve. If there's a better way or another way that we can serve, I hope you will call in and tell us.
We've been talking with Dwayne Ray. He is a member of the technical committee and the board of directors at the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and very instrumental in our technical advancements and our ways of being able to get our programming and signals out to so many different people. Dwayne, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Richard.
And another of our volunteers, Nancy Jones. Nancy, thanks for being with us today.
It's my pleasure.
Could you start out by just telling us a little about yourself?
I am a North Carolina native. In fact, I'm a native of Wake County, and I've lived in Raleigh since 1978, now my adopted hometown. I went to schools in the area, went to school at Carolina, and then by a very roundabout path, ended up working at the United States Postal Service, where I was lucky enough to be able to retire early, almost 3 years ago.
How long did you work with them?
I worked there almost 27 years.
And what did you do mostly?
I did quite a few jobs in the processing and distribution center, which is the big warehouse-like building where all your mail gets brought in on trucks, processed, sorted, and then sent to the carriers and stations. I worked on a machine that no longer exists, I don't believe anywhere in the nation, for a long time, called a letter sorting machine, where you had rows of people sitting keying letters, one a second. Interesting work, because you would get on autopilot, you could listen to all kinds of things on the radio, and all of us at the Postal Service doing those jobs were absolutely overjoyed when TV band radio came into being. That, as you know, is now obsolete since TV has changed its technology. I worked on a small parcel bundle sorter for a while, another piece of mechanization. The favorite job that I had when I was there was working registered mail, which is the most secure way to send anything through the Postal Service system. I worked a lot in that job with lost and found, recovering items that people absentmindedly drop into mailboxes, like cash and bank statements and passports, credit cards, keys, you name it. We have found it in a mail drop box. That was a very gratifying part of my job, getting things back to people.
Well, now that you're retired, what takes up some of your time?
I like to go kayaking on flat water. I'm not a daredevil with white water. I like recreational kayaking on lakes and relatively calm rivers. I like gardening, mostly flower gardening. I really love to dig in the dirt. I've transformed a part of my front yard into a flower garden, and I got my inspiration from a neighbor whose yard looks like a wild explosion of color. I like to travel. Music is probably one of the biggest passions of my life. I regret that I do not play an instrument, but I am a shower singer, and I go to hear lots and lots of live music, and my taste run the gamut from heavy metal to punk to opera. I really, really love music.
Do you have a favorite local group now?
Well, locally, I am very, very fond of Jeff Hart, who is a friend of mine, but I got to know him through music. He writes and arranges all of his own music. He's had several CDs out, and he's a really good person and writes about interesting topics, and I would categorize his music as probably pop music. He's in the rock and roll vein, but certainly not heavy metal.
How did you become involved with TRRS?
way back in the early 80s when this organization was first formed and was in a little tiny studio off Capitol Boulevard, and Annette Henry was the director, I read about the organization in the News and Observer and thought, as a frustrated radio person who never did go into radio, that this might be my chance to get my voice on the air and also to read to people who can't read for themselves. My mother read to me as a child, which was very inspirational to me. And I volunteered there for a while, maybe 2 or 3 years, starting in the 80s. My work constraints began to make it difficult for me to volunteer because I was working a lot of different shifts and working overtime. So when I retired, this was where I came back and have been back here almost 3 years.
Do you have a recorded program or do you read live?
I do recorded programs. I read Vanity Fair Parts A and B. And Vanity Fair A airs on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock. Vanity Fair Part B airs Monday morning at 6 o'clock, Tuesday night at 11 o'clock. And I also record teen magazines, and that program airs on Thursday and Friday nights at 10:30.
When you go through training here, they tell you, don't editorialize, just read what you have in front of us. Now you have an opportunity. Is there something you'd like to tell the listeners out there?
I would like to tell everyone hearing me that all the volunteers at Triangle Radio Reading Service care about you. We are here because we are dedicated to serving you, and we want to know how you feel about what we're doing. We want to hear from you. If you would please pick up the phone and call us. You can reach us at 919-832-5138. We really encourage you to call us and tell us what you like about what we're doing.
And are there maybe one or two programs you'd specifically like them to call about?
Yes, I must admit that I would really like to hear what you think of Vanity Fair Parts A and B and what you think of teen magazines.
Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
Again, it's time for the TRRS Radio Theater on the Air with Bill McClure, Richard Dunnigan, Bob Martin, and Abby Lewis with another episode of
Blind Justice.
Our scene opens with another visiting day at the retirement home.
Happy birthday, Grandpa. I've got a present for you.
Thank you, Abby. I've got a story for you.
Sort of a quid pro quo.
Abby, where did you learn that kind of language?
My dad. He uses it around the house all the time.
And do you know what it means?
No, but he says it a lot, along with habeas corpus and billing hours.
Let's proceed to my office.
No, Grandpa. Let's just go to your room. Take my arm.
Gotcha.
Here we are. Sit down, Grandpa, and I'll climb up on your lap.
Ready for my story?
Grandpa?
Yes?
Grandpa, why is your tummy so nice and soft?
Did I ever tell you about the time I was abducted by aliens?
You were abducted by aliens? Where?
Well, I was having my birthday dinner in 1947 at Little Takeout in Roswell, New Mexico.
Grandpa, you already told me that story. And it wasn't at a takeout restaurant. It was at a ring-a-dink store getting skis.
Well, that's what getting abducted by aliens will do to you.
Come on, Grandpa. Why is it so soft?
So you would be comfortable. Are you?
Yeah, and you're not mad when I sometimes leave chocolate smears on your shirt.
You left those?
Oh, Grandpa.
I thought it was the aliens.
It was. They had grabbed you and shoved you down a chute at the chocolate factory. Then Charlie asked the Lumpa Lumpas to save you. The Lumpa Lumpas transported you across the factory until you came out in bed with Charlie's grandparents, who fed you cabbage until...
Until I noticed the chocolate stain on my shirt.
You remember.
And that really happened?
Would I lie to you?
And where did you learn that from?
From you, Grandpa. Happy birthday. I have a present for you.
Why would you bring a present to me?
Because it's your birthday.
Well, they happen so often.
Grandpa, they happen once a year. Happy birthday. Here's your present.
What is it?
It's some pictures I drew for you.
Tell me about them.
Well, this was last Christmas. You were there, sitting in the big chair. Mom said that over there you wouldn't be in anybody's way. And I was sitting in your lap. Now there's the Christmas tree with all the presents underneath. And Dad taking pictures. Now here's the dinner table with Mom putting turkey on the platter. And Dad pouring more wine. Now here's me sitting on your lap. And behind your back, the dog was eating off your plate. Mom said that you wouldn't notice. Did you?
Never saw a thing.
I thought you did, but wouldn't say anything.
And why would I do that?
Because it's the way you are, Grandpa.
Could I hug you?
Sure. That way I get a chance to poke your tummy. Did you like the pictures? Mother said that you wouldn't appreciate them, but I thought you would. You do like them, don't you?
More every time I look at them.
I thought so. I know my Grandpa. Anyway, I've got to go. Goodbye, Grandpa. See you next week.
Goodbye.
Hey, Bill, they've got a birthday cupcake waiting for you in the rec hall. We're all waiting for you.
My granddaughter was here with a present. Look at this.
Oh, yeah. Great. It's really, great. What is it?
It's a birthday present from my granddaughter.
Bill, I think you would like to be able to see a lot more of that picture than you can.
Yes, I would. I'd like to see every crayon mark, just the way she made them. I'd like to see that stuffed chair with me sitting in it, out of the way. And I'd like to see my granddaughter sitting there in my lap, where we were both out of everybody's way. And I'd dearly love to see me sitting at the dinner table with the dog eating off of my plate, and nobody bothering to tell me, yes, there's so much I'd like to see.
Bill?
I'd like to see a sunrise. I'd like to see the moon creep out on any night. And, Bob, do you know what I'd most like to do?
Bill, the reception's waiting for you.
Bob, I'd like to be able to drive a car. Not to be able to see the seaside or the forests or the 1,001 fast food signs, but because I could do it on my own. I wouldn't have to ask anyone to drive for me.
Bill.
Bob, I know. I know. And I wouldn't trade a chance for any of them for this picture for my granddaughter.
Bill.
Tell them I'll be there as soon as I put my new Rembrandt in my safe.
This ends another experience of
Blind Justice.
Here's Bob back. Did you find anything?
Yeah. I found this article about Paul Wittgenstein.
He was the great concert pianist who lost his right arm during the First World War.
I remember that. He was determined not to let the loss of one arm stop his musical career, so he found ways to develop pieces that could be played with the left hand only.
Before his war injury, he had worked with many of the noted composers of his day and was in a position to ask them to write compositions that he might play using only his left hand.
And so he was presented with compositions by Richard Strauss, Sergei Prokofiev, Paul Hindemith, and Maurice Ravel.
The Ravel Piano Concerto for the left hand has become a staple of the repertoire today, and Paul Wittgenstein continued his career as a concert pianist.
Wow! A concert pianist with only one hand. Bill, do you think it would be harder to play the piano with only one hand, or to play without being able to see the keys or the music?
I wouldn't want to contrast them, Bob. Rather, look at both situations as examples of someone who wasn't going to be limited by what some people call handicaps.
Far better than what someone might imagine.
If only we are given the chance.
And I think we still have a chance before we end this broadcast for Outside the Box. It's time now for Outside the Box with Professor Bill. The problem. A ship is tied to a dock and it has a rope ladder hanging over the side. The rungs are 1 foot apart and 5 of them are visible above the water. Later, when you come back and look at the ship again, the tide has come in and now the boat is sitting 3 feet higher than it was before. There are marks on a pylon that measure the height of the water. How many rungs on the ladder are now showing?
This one is easy. The water has risen 3 feet, so now 2 rungs of the ladder are showing.
If the tide comes in, the boat is now higher than it had been before.
I knew that. I was just trying to see if you were paying attention. This is a trick question, but I'm not going to be tricked. How long is the ladder?
As long as you want it to be.
I didn't want it to be just 5 feet, and now the bottom of the ladder is 3 feet out of the water. If the water goes up 3 feet, the ladder goes up 3 feet. It now has 8 rungs showing.
Is the ship now out of the water, too?
Of course not. The boat floats so it is always the same depth out of the water.
And so will any ladder hanging along the side of the ship. Sorry, Bob. 5 rungs still showing.
I had an uncle that made that kind of mistake once. He was out fishing and found a great place where the fish were really biting. He wanted to make sure he could find this spot again, so he took a piece of chalk and put an X on the outside of his boat, right where they were. That really happened.
And was he able to find that spot again?
No.
Why do you think that was?
Well, first I thought the fish were smart and moved. Then I figured out that it was my uncle that wasn't so smart.
Good for you, Bob.
No, instead of marking the boat, he should have marked the water.
Another solution, thanks to creative thinking from... Outside the Box.
And speaking of marks, we have Myra DeBrule, a graduate of the Governor Moorhead School, and one of our volunteers, who wrote a song about her grandchildren and the marks they made on her life and on the house.
I thought it was fun when I raised my children and enjoyed those little children around me. But then came the grandchildren, and boy, that was it. I loved my grandchildren, and I kept them for their parents to work. And the first little girl I kept for 3 years before the second two were born, and they were like 3 weeks apart in their ages. So I had six weeks old, and 9 weeks old. And I kept those little kids until they went to school, and we had some really good times together. It's just hard for me to tell about all those years and how much fun that we had. And some of it was not quite as much fun, but I think this song pretty much tells it all and sums it up. And it was written, it's very, very true. If you had come in my house over 10 years ago, you would go in that room and wonder who in the world colored all over those walls. But I wrote this little song to commemorate that whole time in my life. It's called Marks on My Walls.
Just one of those details I cannot recall, but I remember well the day they said, come see our picture, and I looked, but the only thing I saw was a million crayon marks all on my walls. There were toys in the bathtub, there were dolls and boats and airplanes, tea set in the living room, there was Lego in the hall, but all through was the sound of children's laughter, but nobody dared to laugh at all. When I saw those crayon marks all on my walls, yes, they made marks on my walls. They were red and green and yellow, there were purple stripes, there were orange circles, there were squigglies in a was a million crayon marks on my walls. Yes, they made marks on my walls. They were red, green, and yellow. There were purple stripes. There were orange circles. There were squigglies in a row. I needed to go and get some paint before somebody sees this. I was too young then to know the markers that I hated so made the children's rainbows. Now the bathtub is empty, the walls are sterile white, but I still hear the echoes of children laughing in the hall as a million memories tumble from the door inside my heart. Now I looked in, but the only thing I saw was a million colored marks on my heart's walls. Yes, they made marks on my walls. They were red, green, and yellow. There were purple stripes. There were orange circles. There were squigglies in a row. I need to go and get some paint before somebody sees this. I was too young then to know the markers that I hated so color all my rainbows.
Mama, come and see our teacher. We made it just for you, 'cause we love you most of all. Grandma, Grandma.
This is Bill McClure for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and thank you for listening in to another edition of Take My Arm.
This is Richard Dunnigan. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience and is designed with the assistance of print and visually impaired volunteers.
And this is Bob Martin. If you could help underwrite any of our special programming, please call us at 919-832-5138. Your assistance goes to keeping us on the air, and it is much appreciated.
Anything else?
Yeah. Remember Bill's concert this weekend? Well, I'm going to be his official page-turner. Wait a minute. If Bill is blind and can't see the music, why does he need a page-turner?
Because the building isn't air-conditioned, and the pages turning keeps me cool.
Oh, that makes sense.
Goodbye.